What happens when cancer arrives not as a metaphor, not as a lesson, but as a brutal economic and physical fact? In 2014, poet Ann Boyer was diagnosed with triple-negative breast cancer, one of the most aggressive forms, disproportionately affecting Black women and younger patients. What followed wasn't a journey of inspiration or triumph, but a descent into the machinery of American healthcare, where bodies become data points and survival carries a price tag measured in millions. Her Pulitzer Prize-winning memoir refuses the sanitized narratives of pink ribbons and brave battles. Instead, it exposes cancer as both personal catastrophe and political reality, shaped by profit-driven medicine, environmental toxins, and a society that demands the sick suffer quietly while performing gratitude. This isn't just one woman's story. It's an indictment of a system that treats illness as commodity and patients as consumers. Cancer doesn't knock politely. It crashes through language itself, transforming the body into alien territory. Boyer describes diagnosis as a linguistic invasion. Suddenly, her body breaks open under the alien terminology of oncology. Unlike illnesses that announce themselves through symptoms, cancer often arrives through surveillance and professional declaration. One fellow patient whispers during chemotherapy, "They tell me I have cancer, but I have my doubts." The newly diagnosed become desperate information seekers, staring into screens filled with survival curves while chemotherapy ports throb with pain. Well-meaning friends send links to baking soda cures and juicing remedies, as if cancer could be defeated with optimism and organic produce. Meanwhile, the real questions go unasked. Our genes are tested, but not our drinking water. Our bodies are scanned, but not our air. Cancer news arrives on the same screens as LinkedIn invitations, catastrophe rendered surreal by modernity itself. In the cancer pavilion, illness erases identity. Bald heads, devastated complexions, steroid-swollen faces, visible chemotherapy ports, everyone looks the same. Age distinctions collapse. The old seem infantile, the young senile, the middle-aged lose everything middle-aged about them. Bodies lose integrity as everything meant to stay inside falls out. Nosebleeds drip everywhere, tears flow constantly, foul odors emerge. Even language breaks down. Mothers who taught children to speak now gesture like babies, unable to recall words for television or cup. Yet gendered labor persists. Wives fill out husbands' forms, mothers fill out children's, but sick women fill out their own. The treatment itself is medieval. Boyer receives adriamycin, nicknamed the Red Devil, a brilliant red drug that destroys tissue if it escapes veins, potentially melts linoleum floors, and leaves bodily fluids toxic for days. This decades-old chemotherapy causes brain damage, infertility, organ failure. The cancer pavilion isn't designed for healing. It's designed for profit, keeping patients in constant circulation to maximize revenue. Cancer treatment delivers what Boyer calls a near-total strike, destroying hair, skin, thought, language, feeling, vigor, appetite, fertility, and breasts. Yet society demands patients self-manage through impossible contradictions. Work harder while exhausted, stay positive while suffering, appear normal while transformed. Cultural narratives insist patients be feisty, sexy, thinking, snarky, telling cancer you messed with the wrong bitch. But cancer isn't an external enemy. It's your own body growing uncontrollably. Boyer describes choosing chemotherapy as jumping off a building when someone holds a gun to your head. She struggles with the ethics of survival, the environmental impact of treatment drugs, the endangered Himalayan yew tree harvested for her medicine, the astronomical cost. How could she justify millions of dollars worth of existence, leaving her corroded, mutilated, uncertain? The physical toll is documented precisely, fingernails lifting painfully, nerves dying with a sizzling sensation, proprioception failing so she can no longer trust her feet. She exists in what she calls post-biological territory, haunting a slightly familiar landscape as a mostly dead person. The commercialization of breast cancer represents a particular obscenity. Pinktober adorns products with pink ribbons, while 40,000 Americans die yearly from the disease. The original ribbon wasn't pink. In 1990, Charlotte Haley created peach ribbons, demanding more prevention funding. When Estee Law approached her, Haley refused, calling them too commercial. The corporation changed the color to pink and distributed a million ribbons by 1992. The Susan G. Komen Foundation raises hundreds of millions while allocating minimal funds to metastatic research, partnering with KFC for Buckets for the Cure and Baker Hughes for pink fracking drills. The lies extend beyond marketing. Researcher Roger Poisson falsified study data. Oncologist Fareed Fata administered chemotherapy to people without cancer. Surgeon Ian Patterson removed healthy breasts after false diagnoses. Patients who complain face a chorus insisting they should be grateful to be alive, a gratitude imperative that silences legitimate criticism of a profit-driven system treating bodies as revenue streams. Pain speaks, but who listens? Boyer challenges Hannah Arendt's claim that pain is incommunicable. Pain is hyper-expressive, manifesting through howls, cries, winces, tears. The issue isn't whether pain can speak, but who society deems worth hearing, particularly bodies marginalized by race, class, gender, or disability. She imagines a body tourism system where others could inhabit pain sensations, the gnawing anxiety preceding lifting fingernails, the relentless agony of bone expansion, the suffocating sensation of hospital mattresses, the electric apocalypse of dying nerve endings. Pain transforms space into temporal endurance. Pain is the experience of a location that exists only as desperation for its end. Understanding pain's rational causes does nothing to diminish its raw feeling. Medical pain scales reduce complexity to numbers, when perhaps Emily Dickinson's poetry better captures pain's reality. Beyond physical pain lies exhaustion, the permanent state of never all better. Exhaustion has become democracy's great equalizer, once proletarian, now universal. The exhausted perpetually try, even when too depleted to recognize they're trying. They become saints of the wasted life, experts at suffering the discord between bodies and hyper-productivized time. Boyer survived, entering what her daughter called a living posthumousness. Treatment cost her neural mitochondria, looks, memories, intelligence, and years of life. Yet she emerged intensified through damage, as if lostness finally makes us real. She spent years documenting everything, though the weight still feels too heavy for its telling. Cancer's myth of singularity means any work about it resembles testimony, judged by veracity rather than form. Oncology excels at producing desolation, cold rooms with technicians behind glass, surgeons marking bodies with purple pens, abandonment by loved ones. Yet Boyer's desolation wasn't solitary. Friends moved with her in shifts through illness, indulging Onko's surrealist fantasies, wearing silk pajamas to movies, throwing, rather than eating, the end of chemo cake. Though partnerless, she had inventive forms of love from extra-legal, unofficial sources. Friends pooled money and time. Those with funds wrote checks so others could fly to help empty surgical drains. When terrified of painful death, her friend Jasper simply said, "We'll all just make sure that doesn't happen." She believed him. Boyer survived, though calling herself a survivor feels like betraying the dead. Still, she's ecstatic daily to be alive. The moon, once obsessed with waning, finally waxes. Survival isn't triumph, it's continuation. It's refusing to let profit-driven systems define your worth. It's finding community in the wreckage and speaking truth when silence is expected.